You're listening to Autumn on the Air, the weekly podcast that brings you conversations about the impact of research commercialization and the people who make it happen. Join us for interviews with patent and licensing professionals, innovators, entrepreneurs, and tech transfer leaders on the issues and trends that matter most. Keep listening for an inside track on the people, IP policies, and politics changing our world.
In today's episode, we're tackling a crucial topic that directly impacts the work of tech transfer professionals: the influence of Washington, D.C. corridor issues on tech transfer operations. Joining us to shed light on this complex landscape is Dr. Sheila Kadura, Associate General Counsel at the University of Texas System. Sheila is responsible for intellectual property matters involving patents, copyrights, trademarks, trade secrets, sponsored research, clinical trials, and technology commercialization and licensing. Sheila is active in the IP community locally as well as nationally. She serves on the executive board as a mentorship chair for the Honorable Lee Yackel Intellectual Property Inn of Court and on the leadership team for the Texas chapter of CHIPS, a nonprofit organization focusing on advancing and connecting women in technology, law, and policy. Sheila also chairs the Autumn Public Policy Legal Task Force. With her background spanning biology, molecular and cellular biology, law, and extensive involvement in the IP community, Sheila is uniquely positioned to offer insights into the intersection of law, policy, and tech transfer. Welcome, Sheila. I'm so excited to have you here on the air.
Morning, Lisa. I'm excited to be with you.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. I know we have a lot to talk about, so let's go ahead and dive right in. So right off the bat, Sheila, I wanted to ask you, what strategies have you found most effective in identifying policies that are negatively impacting tech transfer and advocating for favorable policy changes that support tech transfer activities, both at the local as well as national levels?
So I'll start with the identifying piece of that. I work at the University of Texas System, so I sit at the system level in the Office of General Counsel there. We have 14 institutions that are spread out across the state of Texas of varying sizes. We have your traditional academic research institutions like UT Austin or UT El Paso, and we have big health institutions that focus more on medical education and research and patient care, so like MD Anderson Cancer Center, UT Southwestern Medical Center. So for me, step one is keeping open lines of communication with the tech transfer offices that sit at all of those different institutions. They have various levels of licensing and commercialization activities that are happening. They have different problems. But by keeping those lines of communication open, I ask them, what are your pain points? What trends are you seeing that are concerning? And then I can also tell them about policy changes that I see coming down and ask them, how would that impact what you do on a daily basis? So I sort of have the disadvantage in some ways of sitting a little further away from the tech transfer function, but I have the advantage of having 14 different tech transfer offices to ask when I have questions.
I bet your days are not boring.
They never are. And in terms of advocating, you know, we do that through Autumn to some extent. I'm the chair of the Public Policy Legal Task Force, and we work closely with the Public Policy and Advocacy Committee as well. That's Mike Waring's committee. And for UT System, we work through a centralized government relations representative. I have one who specializes in federal relations and who focuses on IP, among other matters.
Wow, okay.
But she does focus on IP. And then just like I communicate with the tech transfer offices across the system, she does that with her government relations colleagues across the system. And so she asks the same kind of questions. What are you seeing? What can we tell you? And here's what's coming. Please let us know how that will impact your practice.
So Sheila, that leads me to ask, in your opinion, what are some of the overlooked or maybe underestimated challenges that tech transfer professionals may encounter when navigating, let's say, the regulatory landscape in DC?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, Lisa. Our message, I think, is correct, and it's a good message. And we believe as Autumn and as tech transfer professionals that tech transfer is good. It's good for people, it's good for the economy, it's good for human progress generally. But in some ways, I think our story is a little bit nuanced and complex. It sometimes takes more sentences to explain to somebody than maybe they want to hear. And right now we have a lot of people out there that think patents are bad. And
yes,
they think just generally allowing companies to work with us to develop products that would be based on research that was federally funded, they think that's bad. And so we have that inclination, I think, in people's thinking to work around. And I think maybe that's because of what patents do. Patents actually give you the right to exclude other people from doing something. So if I have a patent over a particular drug, we'll call it drug X,
yeah,
that means I can stop somebody else from making or using drug X. And so I think people hear that and they immediately think patents are anti-competitive.
Right. And then that's also causing my drug prices to be a lot
correct,
higher in this country than in other countries. And there's a whole issue on that going on right now with margin rights as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the counter to that is that we know in tech transfer that we as universities, and we know this is true of the government too, neither universities nor the government have the resources or the bandwidth or the expertise to take academic research and turn it into a product or a service that people can use. Research is a very, very different skill than testing and perfecting and ultimately manufacturing a product. And I think people know that. So maybe if we can explain that a little bit more clearly, we can explain why we need private investment. Without tech transfer, we would have a lot of promising technologies that simply sit on the shelf. And we know this because historically, that's what happened before we had the Bayh-Dole Act.
Exactly.
Which allowed our industry collaborations to make products and services. And we know that less tech transfer means less innovation that's going to get to the public. It means fewer products and services. And that includes things like newer and better and cheaper medications. So I think that's our simple message, that tech transfer provides more things, more products, more services, more choices, more options for people, and more market competition. But it does take a little bit longer to, I think, explain that story than it does to just say patents are bad because they mean that people can't make things.
Absolutely. So how do you think tech transfer offices can effectively leverage partnerships with industry stakeholders to help influence policy decisions that are helpful for us?
So our licensees are the other side of tech transfer. So I mentioned earlier, I talked to our tech transfer offices across the University of Texas system a lot. And when I asked them, how will a particular policy impact your licensing? They will often say something like, that may make my licensing negotiations much more difficult, much more inefficient. Maybe people won't want to license technologies from me. But the flip side of that is, can we get that story from the licensee as well? And so one of the things that UT System did, and I think a lot of universities did in thinking about margin rights, was communicate with the licensees. How would this impact your decision to take a license from our university? Or would you go look elsewhere where you don't have the concern about the federal government coming in and taking intellectual property from you many years into the development of a product?
Yeah, and I think for big pharma, where there's such a significant investment required to bring a lot of those products to market, not only in terms of cost, but in terms of time as well, you know, that was a significant consideration for sure.
Yes, and I think for years, those conversations with licensees, they've been happening. It's
exactly.
Margin rights are nothing new.
No,
it's
they've
been in the statute for a long
yeah.
time. But I think there is a concern now that we have this potential for an expanded use of those rights.
Exactly.
And that is causing people to ask a lot more questions at the licensing stage.
Definitely. Well, switching gears a little bit, I wanted to ask you, how do you foresee emerging technologies such as AI shaping the future of tech transfer practices? And what regulatory considerations do you think tech transfer professionals should be mindful of?
So that's a broad question. I think there are probably a lot of different ways to answer it. But one thing that I talk about with our tech transfer offices is how best to protect different kinds of intellectual property. Because ultimately, those people are the ones making the decision. Is this something that we can patent? Is this something that we can maybe protect by copyright? And then that will affect how you ultimately decide to license a technology or even market it, in terms of trying to find people to help you commercialize the technology. So, for example, diagnostic methods are difficult to patent
yes,
right
very.
Now.
Yes.
And software inventions. So you mentioned AI.
Yeah.
So software has been problematic in terms of understanding when those innovations are eligible. And I think that will continue in the AI space. And then ultimately, when you think about how you want to license something, if you have a patent, that's going to dictate the types of terms you use to license. And then there are going to be other things where you either can't patent or you don't want to, or you can't copyright or you don't want to. And maybe you would have to rely more on your contract law. So that's going to definitely affect what you put in the contract. And then there are things that we license through our tech transfer offices that really can only be protected as trade secrets. And I think data is a great example of that. So we do a lot of licensing in terms of data, but because it is protected by being kept a secret, that absolutely affects how we talk to potential licensees about it. And then it affects the terms that we put in the agreement once we find a licensee to work with.
So Sheila, I wanted to ask you a little bit of a personal question because you have a background in both law and science. So tell us, how do you approach bridging the gap between legal intricacies and scientific innovation within tech transfer?
So I think it goes a little bit to what we were just talking about, Lisa, where we have to explain why the law matters. And so, for example, explaining how you protect the intellectual property and why it matters when you're actually drafting the terms of a license or having these initial discussions with the potential licensee, I think that helps. And we definitely use examples. Again, another advantage of, I think, being at a big system is we have lots of different kinds of technologies being licensed at any given time. So we can use examples. And then I think it's important to be open to what your tech transfer office is trying to accomplish. I get concerned that as a lawyer, and especially sitting at the system level in the Office of General Counsel, I never want to give the impression that my job is to say, no, don't do that. That's too risky. We want to be creative and find ways to help our tech transfer offices accomplish their goals and do so within the bounds of the law and limit our legal risk.
So Sheila, I know you do a lot of mentoring. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the common misconceptions or blind spots you've observed among aspiring tech transfer professionals, and how do you address them?
It's a great question, Lisa, and I'm really passionate about mentoring, so I'm glad that you asked about this. So a lot of my mentoring, because I'm a lawyer, is directed to law students or more junior lawyers, or sometimes maybe a lawyer who is looking to transition from a different type of job, say private practice, and maybe move into higher ed or tech transfer. And I think a common misconception when I talk to law students or lawyers who are thinking about higher ed is that they think you have to stop being a lawyer to do this work. I can tell you that is not the case at all. I practice the law every day. I give legal advice daily in my role. It's true that I do less litigation. I stand up in front of courts less, I talk to judges less, I file a lot fewer briefs, but I'm still definitely practicing the law and I still feel like a lawyer at what I do. I wanted to mention that I also participate in a mentorship program that is managed by our UT System Office of Talent and Innovation. And what that program does is it pairs PhD students who want to explore careers outside of academic research with people like me, who started in academic science, and then I changed my mind and I went to law school. And I meet a lot of PhD students who are interested in either tech transfer or entrepreneurship, and they mostly need connections. They want to find people who took that journey, and they want to ask them, what do you like about your job? What do you not like about your job? And how did you get there? So I think that part of mentoring for me is really making sure that they can find somebody who had a career path that looks like what they envision for themselves. And then before we leave mentoring, I wanted to just mention one more thing, and that's that I think we can all encourage innovation in various ways that might sound like mentoring or just might sound like encouraging. So I have two daughters, and so one of the things I like to do is point out ways that innovation that's coming out of the University of Texas system is helping the world. And so one example of this is when I took my daughters to get their COVID-19 vaccines, I told them about Dr. Jason McClellan, who is a professor at UT Austin and who had done an enormous amount of work on the coronavirus spike protein. And that became very important for developing the COVID vaccines that they received. And I talked to them when we unfortunately hear about someone in our family who has cancer. I talked to them about Dr. Jim Allison at MD Anderson Cancer Center and his work on tumor immunotherapy, because I think it's important to me that I want my girls to see scientists as heroes. And I think it might be working because even though they mostly still, when I ask them what they want to be, they say, I want to be a YouTuber or a pop star. But every now and then they say, you know, I might like to invent things that help people. So maybe some of it is sinking in.
Oh, they'll grow through that phase. They all want to be YouTubers, famous athletes, you know, something like that. So yeah. Well, thank you for doing all that mentoring. It really does have an impact. So that's fantastic. And I wanted to switch gears again and ask you about strategies that you've found most effective in fostering a culture of innovation within universities and research institutions, particularly in the context of technology, commercialization, and IP management.
Sure. So for most of this, it's going to be happening at the campus level across the UT system. So I don't often get to play a direct role in kind of spreading the tech transfer message on our campuses. I know that the way they do this is by using success stories. So they show another professor or somebody on campus who has had an invention and maybe started a business and how that's either been successful or been fulfilling. And they also engage in a lot of training types of situations where they want to engage more faculty, have more faculty know that these are options and how they can approach the tech transfer office when they might have an idea and what kinds of ideas the tech transfer offices are interested in. At the system level, we do sometimes get questions in this space, and I think that that is because all of the intellectual property is owned by the board. So I think sometimes a student or a faculty member says, well, I need to go talk to the board office about this. I love it when that happens because it's one of the rare occasions that I get to talk directly to these enthusiastic innovators. So I listen, I make sure I understand what they need, and then I get them to the right person on their UT campus who can help them.
So going back to things going on in DC, and there's been a lot going on both in the patent space and we were talking about Martian rights, I'm curious, how do you anticipate some of these ongoing legislative debates coming out in DC, and how do you think they're going to impact the future of tech transfer practices and policies?
So Martian rights is a great place, I think, to start there, Lisa. And I participated here at the Autumn meeting in a panel that included Autumn's Mike Waring, as well as Joe Allen and Bob Hardy. And we talked a lot about Martian rights. And it was in part because that is something that's happening right now and it's on everybody's minds, but we also got a lot of questions about it. So clearly the Autumn membership is thinking about this a lot. Our concern, of course, is that this would have a very chilling effect on tech transfer because it would make licensees less willing to work with us. And so that is certainly a concern, and that is why Autumn has worked very hard to advocate against expanding the use of federal merchant rights. I think patent eligibility is another one. So we touched on that a little bit in our panel. It certainly affects tech transfer because it determines, again, how you protect your intellectual property, which then affects how easy it is to license it or how you would go about licensing it.
I'm rolling my eyes because I do a lot of work in the diagnostic space and have been banging my head on my computer ever since the Supreme Court decisions, you know, 10 years plus ago. Yeah, it's very frustrating. Whether it's diagnostics or, like you said, software, it's a challenging space.
Particularly challenging right now.
Yes.
And I think one of the things that we've seen is that our excellent patent prosecution attorneys are having to do so much in terms of thinking about how they might be able to work around the case law and the patent office's guidance on diagnostic methods. But they're also thinking, well, what if this law passes? What type of claim would be the best to protect this intellectual property? Or what if a different law passes? So I feel like we're all spending an enormous amount of time trying to think about these things. It would be great if we had some clarity in the law.
Yeah, I know Senator Tillis and Coons have been working on it for a number of years now, and it would really be nice, like you said, to get that certainty. But when that's going to happen remains to be seen.
Absolutely. So we will continue to watch that space. And you mentioned AI earlier. There will continue to be a lot of activity around AI. We had recently the U.S. Patent Office issued its guidance on AI-enabled inventions. And I think we're going to continue to see a lot of developments around data use. So from a privacy perspective, rules and regulations around how we can use data, but also thinking about how data is used in AI implications. And I think those are places we're going to see agency speaking and probably eventually state and the federal government.
So Sheila, if you had a crystal ball and you could pull that out and look ahead to the future, what do you believe would be the most pressing policy priorities for tech transfer professionals? And how do you think they can proactively engage with policymakers to address those issues?
So I think as Autumn members and as people who do believe that tech transfer is good for people in our country, the biggest priority is protecting and growing, to the extent we can, the tech transfer ecosystem that was enabled by the Dole Act and then built by tech transfer professionals and Autumn members. And one of the ways I think that our tech transfer offices can help us with this goes back to helping us identify the things that on the ground in their offices result in less technologies that get licensed and then developed. And some of these are the things that we've already talked about. Some of them might be what we see as an increase in reporting requirements and the amount of time and administrative focus that has to go into responding to requests for information from the federal government and into putting all of this information into the iEdison system. That might be something that you tell us is impacting your tech transfer practices because it's taking your attention away from licensing and commercializing. My best advice is to keep your government relations reps informed about all of this. One of the things I like to try to do at UT and I think is helpful is to relate this back to the whole goal of higher ed. We want to educate people because we know that we need scientists and we need good scientists to help us solve the problems of this world. And we can talk about how the tech transfer progress helps students learn, helps students get excited about innovation and making products and helping people. And ultimately, the goal is we get more technologies out there and we change the world for the better.
So Sheila, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Thank you for all the advocacy and policy and mentorship efforts that you do. And it's been a real pleasure having this opportunity to spend some time with you today.
Thank you, Lisa. It was an honor to be here.
That brings us to the end of our episode. A special thank you to Sheila for sharing her expertise with us today. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for more insightful conversations on Autumn on the Air. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Autumn on the Air with Lisa Mueller. Get social with us and share your thoughts. You can tweet us at AUTM or visit us online at AUTM.net. We'll be back next week on the air. Be sure to join us.